Well, good afternoon and welcome to another episode of Ask the Expert. I'm your host, Ray Lytle, and with me, our best and favorite expert, at least my favorite expert, Dr. Nicole Florence, is with us again. I think she's also your favorite. Today, we're going to be talking about something good today. We are going to be talking about summer safety. Summer safety today. Dr. Florence is an internal medicine physician and a pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Coke and Mill, part of Memorial Health System. Hello, doctor. How are you? And welcome.
I'm hot.
Yeah, afternoon. It is hot out there, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my gosh. It is something else. Can we start a little bit with that, like dehydration you talk about summer things. Like right now, people out there listening, I know a personal story of someone this weekend who decided they didn't drink water. They were in the house, so they went out and started working. Within an hour of working this last weekend, passed out.
I believe
it. Was vomiting repeatedly. Eventually had to go to the hospital.
Right. Probably had a little heat stroke with that dehydration. So it's important, on a normal day, you need to have 60 to 80 ounces of water a day. And when you're working out in the heat or when you're sweating, you have to remember you're losing water and you're losing salt. So we typically recommend for every 20 minutes that you're working out in the heat that you need to replace that water and sometimes a little salt like Powerade, Gatorade. You need to replace that every 20 minutes with about 6 ounces. So on top of what you're supposed to be doing every day, you need to add about 6 ounces every 20 minutes to make sure you're staying on top of things.
I have this argument with the girls that play softball for me. Some of them will just drink a sugary drink.
Right.
And I'll always say, have some water too. No, 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 this is fine. This is fine. They go, no, have some water too. Can you answer this? I mean,
sure.
Can you just have the sugary stuff and be fine, or is that an issue?
Typically the first 45 minutes or so, you can just do water. But after about 45 minutes or an hour, especially if you are sweating, sweat has a lot of salt in it, sodium, potassium. You do need to replace that. So typically after 45 minutes to an hour, I will suggest that you have what we call an electrolyte solution. So Gatorade is pretty good, but you're right. G2 has a lot less sugar than Gatorade does. There's something called Powerade Zero. So you can still replace that salt and some of that water without all the sugar.
But any product made by, say, High C, probably not the best thing to be drinking on hot days.
It's probably a little bit more sugar and juice and probably not hydrating.
Right. And same thing goes with soda.
Same thing goes with
soda. A diet soda does not have the same properties.
No, it doesn't have the same properties that you would need to stay on top of things.
Because I tell the girls every inning. Every inning,
Exactly.
Every inning, get water in your system. You're going to overheat. And for competitive reasons as well, it's like if you're hydrated and the other team isn't, well, then you're top
of
your game and they're not.
And keep your hats and your helmets off, especially in the cool air. You have to remember that's going to keep that body temperature up higher. It's going to start summer football sessions.
Yeah.
I worry a lot about those boys.
Yeah.
When we speak to coaches, we talk about, hey, let them have their water breaks. Let's make sure they're taking off their helmets and they're cooling off really well, because they are a huge setup for dehydration.
And it's hard now because the IHSA limits the amount of time that they can practice.
Exactly.
And I'm not sure that's a good thing because they're so condensed in the time. They have to just run through, think, so they don't get that time.
And they try to skip those breaks in order to have a more efficient practice.
Yeah. When I played, we didn't have a break. Our coach would have a 3-hour practice.
Yeah.
But I'd say of the 3 hours, an hour of it was us in between things. We'd practice 96 degrees out. But he would say, okay, water, take a knee, helmet off, everybody relax.
Absolutely.
And we would have these little 10-minute breaks throughout the practice. Nowadays, they've got only 90 minutes to practice, and it's just boom, boom, boom,
Well,
boom, boom,
and
boom,
also,
boom.
There's times that we look at the heat index, where the heat index is so high because of the dew point, the moisture in the air, the heat, that we will even recommend that there not be practices during high sun or high peak heat and sun time.
Have them early in the morning.
Have them really early in the morning. Have them later at dusk, or don't have them at all, which, you know, isn't always the most popular answer.
There's no coach who's ever going to say, oh, we'll just choose to not have it.
Well, I've had some talks with a few of them because I always tell them, I nothing is as important as the health and the life of your boys.
Yeah.
So you have to
When I played, there were times where it was so hot. It was like everybody in the gym.
Right.
The fans were going. And
absolutely.
It was just conditioning.
Sure.
Just conditioning,
yeah,
runs.
Shorts, no pads, no helmet. Absolutely.
That way we'd stay in shape, but we wouldn't, because bad things can happen. You think your team's going to get worse because you can't practice the full 90 minutes in 98-degree heat. Wait till your team gets worse because people are dropping over because of heat exhaustion.
Exactly.
Anyway, I want to start with that just because of today, but there's a lot of other things. We talk about summer safety. We talk about a lot of other things, especially with younger kids and older people. I mean, everyone has to think about safety. So let's talk first about, I think, one of the most dangerous things. Of course, this is me. When my daughter was growing up, I was scared to death of the pool.
Right.
And the swimming pool. What do parents do?
Well, there's a lot of things. First I want to throw out a statistic for you. On average, 10 people die daily an unintentional drowning in a pool. 10 a day.
Wow.
And two of those are typically less than 14 years old. So it's really important to know safety with being at the pool or having your own pool. So a lot of these rules are common sense, but we just feel like we need to make sure everyone knows. First off, never swim alone. Always have a swim buddy.
No matter what.
No matter
what.
Kids
are not swimming alone.
If you're in the pool and something happens where you choke a little bit or you dive in, you get hurt, you're underwater, if there's no one there to help you, you're more likely to have an injury or a problem. So first off, we say never swim alone. Also, if you have a child who you're taking to the pool, a friend of yours, a neighbor, or even at your pool, it's okay to say, hey, let's figure out how well you swim and see if they can tread water for 5 minutes, see if they can swim across the pool. I think too many times we'll say to that kid, hey, can you swim? Yeah. Take their word for it. Then you get to the pool and you're like,
Turn around, they're floating.
Yeah. So, I think it's okay to have, a little assessment of how well, not only how your child swims, you should know that, but as well as their buddies that come over to the pool or who you're going to be responsible for.
There aren't people that have pools and children that don't know how to swim, right? I mean, if you have a pool, chances are your child's going to know how to swim.
You would hope that everyone in the home knows how to swim.
Right.
But I have had it where the child knows how to swim, but the parent doesn't.
Well, why would they have a pool?
Exactly. So then what happens if something occurs and that adult needs to jump in the pool and save that child? So it's just, I like I said, these seem common sense,
right?
But these are things that we do have to say. So, knowing the level of the ability to swim of those in the home, we always encourage swim lessons for anyone who's supposed to own a pool, who wants to own a pool. The other thing is know where the safety equipment is.
Right, every pool has.
Pool has safety equipment. So you want to know where that is. I also encourage people to become CPR certified, especially if you have your own pool.
No, you mean not just watch it on TV and say, oh, that must be how they do it?
Well, I believe you can YouTube it, and right. I think you can have a pretty good idea. But, there are ways to become CPR certified. The American Red Cross will do that for you. You can also look online. I think they have other classes and links. But I think it's a good idea to become CPR certified.
My daughter took a babysitter class or something once, and
exactly.
I want to say it was at Memorial.
Yes.
And at the babysitter class, they actually showed,
they showed
them
how
it worked. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's a great skill to have. So I definitely encourage that.
And then drowning is what we worry most about?
Well, that's what we worry most about. Now, what happens, I think it's a myth that you need a certain level of water to actually drown.
Well, over your head, right?
Well, not necessarily. There's something called dry drowning.
What is dry drowning?
Dry drowning is when you can become a little choked, even on a small amount of water, just a couple of inches of water.
Oh, wow.
And you start a choke or cough reflex in your throat that prevents you from breathing adequately.
Ugh.
and that can somewhat cause suffocation and drowning without a high level amount of water. So it's called dry drowning. So I always, you know, it's always important to say, well, there's only a couple of inches of water, even like in a baby pool. It can still
happen. Danger, yeah.
It's still dangerous. Make sure that those kids are being supervised. Make sure you know how to address it when it occurs with CPR or what have you. So,
how much water needs to be in our lungs?
You only
for
need
us
a couple
be...
inches.
I mean, but in our, like, how much do we take in before?
Not very much. You know, that's the issue with waterboarding, for instance, right? They don't really drown per se, but it's that choking and that gagging response from having a little bit of water in the back of your throat that causes the reflex. So you only need a couple of inches
wow,
of water.
Wow, that's we look for that, and then when that happens, the same things that you do for regular drowning.
Exactly. Just supportive, you know, airway support, things you're going to learn in your CPR. You may have to breathe for them, check their heart rate. You might have to support them. Of course, 911 should always be your first
right.
call.
All right. So when kids are swimming, they also are wearing very little clothing.
Very little.
And same with adults. Everyone, when we're swimming, very little clothing.
Some
so that
should,
means
some shouldn't.
Yes. Yeah, like, really, come on. Do you really want to see me show up at your pool in a Speedo? You know, some people should wear a little bit more clothing. Let's admit it. But they're out there, and your sun, your body and skin are exposed to the sun. How big an issue do we have
well,
there?
Well, it's a big issue. You have to remember your skin's kind of like your armor. It's your protection, your barrier. And if you're getting too much sun or heat, it's going to cause some cracks in that armor or barrier. You can get a sunburn, which I'm sure many people have had. And that's just the typical redness. It's tender. I'm going to put a little aloe on it. It's uncomfortable. But sometimes those burns can be really bad. I have seen second degree as well as third degree burns from being out in the sun and not being protected.
I've seen people where they get like the big bubbles.
Those are your second degree burns or even thicker.
Horrible.
So, you know, that can be very uncomfortable. That can cause infection, can cause pain. I've had to send some to the burn unit to.
Oh, wow. It's that bad.
I've had them that bad to have wound care. But, you know, it's not just when it happens then. Then you have to think about your skin over so many years. You know, you will predispose yourself to skin cancer if you have recurrent burns and recurrent sun exposure.
I'll tell you, I have not, in my life, I have not burned very much. Because I'm Hispanic, I've got the really dark
different skin tone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has a little bit to do with it. But as I've gotten older, especially in the last, it seems like the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
I find myself like, boy, my skin feels irritated. And I'll look at it and I'm like, oh, it's red.
Your skin doesn't tolerate it
yeah,
the way
it's
it used to.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. not as, I don't know what the word would be. It's just not as tough as it used to be. Well,
right.
it's more tough. But
resilient.
It's not, yes, it's not as resilient as it once
right.
was. And especially like here on my nose. And if you look, you probably see.
Mm-hmm.
I got a little bit at a softball tournament a few weeks ago. And then I made the mistake of using this facial stuff that peeled it off. And I went out in the sun, didn't use sunscreen. The next
Ouch.
Week, oh my goodness.
Ouch.
It was
well,
horrible.
And, you know, what we usually recommend is you try to be as covered as possible, especially younger kids, especially my babies, you know, two, three, younger. It's okay for them to wear, I know the little ones look cute in their bikinis, but
right.
it's okay for them to wear swim shorts and swim shirts. You know, make sure they have a hat. Always remember to put that SPF and that sunscreen on the top of your feet, around your ears, and even in your hair and your scalp. Probably the
really?
The largest amount of burns that I see, especially on our younger kids, are on their earlobes, on their scalps, or even on the tops of their feet.
Because you don't think
because
to put that on.
Because we forget to put that on those
Everybody thinks
areas.
top of the nose,
right, the
and
face,
forehead,
the
face.
Arms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then,
so you want to cover everything.
And the underside of your arms, too?
Absolutely.
Like if you're laying like that, you can
cover
end up getting...
everything.
So, all right, and what SPF do we use? Like, they have different
well,
numbers. Does it make a difference?
I always recommend 30. 30 is going to give you pretty good protection. If you're really fair skin or you've had severe burns in the past, you probably need to stick with 50. A lot of people will do 15, which, you know, I think in their mind, it thinks I want to tan a little bit, but not burn. But we usually recommend at least 30 to be properly protective.
So you need
skin.
At least a 30. Like this
at
weekend, I'll be
30.
Out tournament SPF 30.
Yeah, you might need a zinc stick
going
on
my
nose.
Yeah, is it the white thing?
I think
you
might need the
like the old fashioned stick. Like the old fashioned lifeguards.
Right,
I want
right.
to put oh boy. Could you imagine how if they're not embarrassed enough? Could you imagine that? Right, listen, we're talking about summer safety, and we're continuing it. It's Ask the Expert right here on WTAX. More with Dr. Nicole Flores.
Back to Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX. Brought to you by Memorial Health System. Our phone lines are open at 753-1240. That's 753-1240. Now, ask the expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM, WTAX.
Our expert is Dr. Nicole Florence, internal medicine physician and pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Kokomil, part of Memorial Health System. And we're talking about summer safety. Just talked about the pool and our skin. Let's talk about, you know, kids are active in the summer. Really active, and they're doing things like running around. They got these hoverboards now.
Oh,
I see
yeah.
them.
Scooters.
These scooters and also bicycles. Let's talk a little bit about head injuries, which is a big problem when kids are riding around in those things.
Right. So, you know, I always tell my patients, you only get one brain. We can transplant a lot of things, but that's one thing we can't transplant. You do something to your brain, you have a traumatic brain injury, it's really hard to recover from that. So it's very important to wear that helmet when you're riding.
That one fall can change your life when you're a kid.
That one fall can change your life. And that helmet can protect you. Now, when you fall, of course, you know, it may not protect some of the other scratches and bruising or other type of bone injuries you might have. But if you fall while riding a bike or a scooter, especially onto concrete, a street or a trail, it can cause a pretty traumatic injury. We've seen skull fractures. We've seen bleeds. There can be swelling associated with that. And depending on the area that is associated, you can have loss of function.
Yeah, I mean, there's
that.
Severe permanent damage that
permanent
can be caused.
Permanent damage. We call them traumatic brain injuries. And they are completely preventable if you wear that helmet while you're doing those activities.
And so many children refuse to wear.
They don't. You know, and I like
and adults
seeing,
too, by
adults
way.
Too. And that's what I was thinking. I love seeing families ride bikes together and the adults have their helmets on, which means the kids have their helmets on. So we as adults can model for our kids. You know, in the office, we always ask those kids, do you have a bicycle helmet? Do you wear it? If there's any issue in getting a helmet, there's a lot of places around town that you can get a donated helmet or one at a reasonable cost.
And they should wear the helmet. When do they wear the when would they wear the helmet?
So I really encourage when you have that child that's even 3 years old riding that little tricycle up and down the street.
Because at 3 years old, my daughter could have used the helmet like 24 hours a day.
Right.
She could have slept in the crib in a helmet, to be honest.
So definitely when you're doing very active things like a tricycle, a bike, a scooter, hoverboard, skateboarding, we see a lot of injuries with skateboarding. Those are important activities to wear your helmet. But I think it's good to get the kids starting to wear the helmet as a younger age, because they're more likely to continue to do so as they get older.
The stigma's sort of leaving the helmets. When I was a kid,
so
nobody wanted to wear a helmet.
Right.
The kids are now growing up with it. They're seeing the cool kids wearing helmets. And I think the last 20 years, they've gotten a lot better at it.
It's gotten a lot better. And I think, too, unfortunately, we've had, you know, a lot of bad injuries that people are aware of. Or we're starting to see the consequences of not wearing that helmet. You know, we have kids that have such traumatic brain injury, it changes their personality. Sometimes they can't speak. They can't go to school. Some of them have difficulty walking. It changes your personality. There's a lot of
issues. A scrape
on
your knee or elbow is temporary.
Exactly.
A head injury, a brain injury can be permanent.
They can be permanent. Very hard to come back from that. So put the helmet on, most definitely.
And like I said, even if you can't afford one, there are always different.
Exactly.
I believe my mother volunteered once Was it the Red Cross or somebody did some kind of helmet drive, and she volunteered and handed them out to the kids and blah, blah, blah.
Which is great.
You know, that kind of stuff still goes on. So.
And they do also, I think if you check, I'm going to say this, and they probably may not be doing it for the budget cost, but the Secretary of State also used to have clinics or things that you could take the kids and, you know, even learning the rules of the road and safe bicycle riding.
Right.
You know, which side of the road should I ride on?
Oh, I'm sure they scrapped that. Come on.
Right?
Come on. You're like $7 billion in the hole. There's no way that program's
still doing that. But, you know, a lot of people forget, you know, how do I signal turning right or left with my arms while I'm riding a bike, so the cars or the people behind me know which way I'm going. You know, knowing the rules of the road can be really important. So,
which a lot of kids don't. I mean, they're so focused on how do I keep my balance.
Absolutely.
That they don't know things like you got to stop here, you got to look here, you got to signal.
There's
all those things.
You know, the trails are wonderful because we don't have to worry about that as much. But even safe trail riding, knowing, you know, that there might be people that are passing to the left, you know, being aware of your surroundings. So I think there's some rules of the road that we need to teach our kids, too, that will make them safer bicycle riders.
And they do have, there are things now on the internet that you can get for free. Just
Absolutely.
Have your kids watch them, and they all love YouTube. Anyway, listen, it's a half hour, or it's a 30 minutes past the hour. We got a break for news. We'll come back. More things to cover. We're talking about summer safety. All those things that you should be doing or at least considering as the summertime is here. What are they? We're discussing them with our expert, Dr. Nicole Florence, an internal medicine physician and pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Cochemill, part of Memorial Health System. More Ask the Expert after the news.
You're listening to Ask the Expert on News Radio 12.
Summer safety is the topic. Our expert is Dr. Nicole Florence, an internal medicine physician and a pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Cochemill, part of Memorial Health System. We're talking about those things that you need to be aware of. How do you keep your family, your children, how do you keep everyone safe during the summer and yourself? We've talked about heat and the problems you can get with the heat and the dehydration and heat stroke. Pool. We've talked about swimming. We've talked about your skin. We've talked about bicycle helmets. Who would have thought bicycle helmets, but how important they are as you're riding bikes and things. Now let's get into nature trying to kill us with bug bites and plants, because we have problems with both of those.
Well, and especially, you know, in the last few weeks as the weather changes, we've had a lot of issues with the buffalo gnats, with the mosquitoes. You know, people are spending a lot more time outside. So we've definitely seen an increase in those types of bug bites or reactions.
And fleas and pets, too. Or just
fleas and pets
as
well.
Oh, my God, such a pain.
Right.
But, yeah, we do notice, especially at dusk. Mm-hmm. The mosquitoes and stuff are just, they're horrible.
And, you know, it depends on where you are. You know, obviously being, you know, near lake water, pond water. If you live in an area with a lot of brush, you're probably going to have a lot more exposures to certain mosquitoes and bugs than if you're just in your back patio and you don't have a lot of trees and bushes. So it can kind of depend on your environment that you're sitting
in. Like ticks. Everybody always talks about ticks. Is summer a good time for ticks, or is that a different time of year?
No, you know, summer is a good time for ticks. We just had this tick infestation actually in our dogs, because my son likes to take the dogs running on the trail, and they kind of run off the trail and they brush against things. And then next thing you know, you have to keep up with the medicines that you give the dog every month. So that doesn't happen. And that will help you with the fleas and the ticks. So it can be seasonal just because of the different things we are doing different times of the year.
So you get bugs are a big for human beings. What's our biggest
thing
that we can worry about?
The biggest bug thing. Okay, well, let's go by annoyance.
Okay.
Now, you know, probably the most annoying thing is the buffalo gnat. You can't probably really sit out anywhere without tons of gnats just everywhere.
Chewing them away.
And they will go up your nose, in your ear. You open your mouth to talk. They're down your throat.
Oh, the worst.
It can be pretty annoying. So they're more of an annoyance. More so than being overly dangerous.
Right.
We do have some people who will react a little bit to those buffalo gnat bites.
Like what kind of reactions do they give?
So any reaction you can have, it's kind of just what we call a local allergic reaction, where the area of the bite gets a little red, might get a little swollen, might get a little itchy and tender. That usually lasts a day, maybe two,
so
and then it goes away.
It's just annoying.
It's just annoying more than anything. But when we get into things like the mosquitoes, obviously a higher level of annoyance. Right. Those bites can be a little bit more reactive, can be a little bit more tender, itchy. They can get infected if we're scratching at those. And then when you go a step higher, we look at wasps and bee stings.
Oh, the
so
worst.
Those can be very toxic, especially if you're known to be allergic to them. But a bite from one of those can cause a full body allergic reaction where you can't breathe.
Like if you're highly allergic to a bee or a wasp, one bite can lead you to get into.
Absolutely. Of what we call an allergic or full anaphylactic reaction,
anaphylactic.
Which means your whole body reacts to it,
right.
And you have difficulty breathing. Your throat might close off. You might start swelling of the face or the lips. Those folks usually know who they are, and they carry a special pen that they can take, the EpiPen, to prevent that reaction.
Where do you stab someone with an EpiPen if they're having any kind of reaction?
Well, wherever you can.
Oh, really? There's no special place you have to stab
them? The thigh is a pretty good area.
Thigh
is a pretty good area. But it's one of those where, again, the gnats and mosquitoes are kind of annoying, but the wasps and the bee stings can be a little bit more of a health issue.
We're not to change subjects, but we're fortunate in the United States. I mean, there are other places on this planet where they have malaria and Zika.
Exactly.
We have West Nile virus.
But
they
have
Zika. Look at South America right now with Zika.
Absolutely. Malaria.
Oh, my God.
You're right. You know, and there's other types of mosquito-borne fevers and illnesses across the world that we don't have. So we are pretty lucky. Most of our issues are kind of more annoying.
I had a friend who got bit by a mosquito, scratched it, and then it turned into, correct me if I'm, cellulitis or something.
So that's the biggest issue. So it becomes a reaction locally, but what happens when it scratches, we itch.
Right.
We all have a little bit of bacteria on our skin, but as we scratch more, we get more bacteria in that area, and it can become infected.
And so that's what cellulitis is.
What cellulitis is that area became infected. So some things that we have you do, you know, a cool compress, ice will help with the local reaction, will help with the itching, taking an antihistamine, like an allergy pill.
Okay.
Like loratadine, Claritin, Zyrtec, that should help. Washing with antibacterial soap. All those things should really help. But if you notice that it's not getting better after a couple of days, you probably do need to talk to your physician to make sure there's not infection.
And how common is it?
Infection happens quite commonly, actually. Mm. It's probably we see a rise in those visits, most definitely. We've been seeing a rise since May.
We scratch with our dirty nails and things like that.
We scratch with our dirty nails.
Or we rub up against something.
Absolutely.
What about plants now? We all know about poison ivy and sumac. Yeah, and oak.
Anything with like a sap like that you can react to. So when that happens, we encourage you to wash all of your clothing. I even have you rinse off your tennis shoes if you had a hat that you were wearing, because that can be on any of the clothing that you were exposed to.
I mean, there are some people that are real highly allergic to it.
Well, the other part of it is poison ivy is more allergenic. It's more toxic than what it used to be 10 years ago.
Why?
I think as we try to use weed killers and sprays and we burn down those bushes, I think we're creating like a super plant poison
Like they're
ivy.
Coming back with a vengeance.
So they're coming back with a vengeance.
Yeah, that's what nature does.
So you have a lot of people that say, boy, I never used to be allergic to poison ivy, but now I brush up against it and I tend to get a rash. So, you know, the biggest thing, of course, is to avoid it. If you know you're going to be on a trail, camping, you're going to be working in brush, try to stay as covered as possible.
You hear camping horror, and I don't want to get too.
Yeah.
You hear camping horror stories involving these leaves.
Right.
That's why I don't camp. I just don't. I would never camp unless there was like a porta potty.
Right.
These stories are so frightening that you hear the misery.
It can
that
get pretty bad.
Yeah.
And so, you know, while we will sometimes use just a topical cream that might help with the itch, might calm it down. If you have a pretty good size of poison ivy, or if it's on your face or on your privates, we usually tell you to call your doctor right away.
I mean, how many people constantly get it on their private?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. we see a lot of those. But you might need further treatment with steroids or something a little bit stronger.
How long does poison ivy last usually?
Well, you know, you hope it's going to be less than a week. You know, you can continue to break out after you've been exposed. But usually at about a week, it should calm down. It should dry out and your body should be somewhat
rid
of it.
Is that the worst, or is the oak and the sumac?
They can be a little worse. You know, the part of the problem is as you continue to scratch and itch, it kind of makes the poison ivy last longer, even though you haven't really been exposed to it for a while. So what's really important is to stop that itch-scratch cycle. That's really important.
Just put like a calamine lotion, something
like that. Calamine, over-the-counter cortisone cream can be helpful.
Is anything what the calamine lotion will tingle, right? Doesn't that do
it? It might tingle a little bit.
What's in there to make that makes that
basically tingle? Almost like the Benadryl. It's kind of an antihistamine substance. The other thing you can do, there are people that do what are called bleach baths, where you run kind of a tepid bath and put like a cap full of bleach in it, and it'll actually dry out that poison ivy or that sumac or oak and help with the itch.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
And that will
– that can
is
help.
That no wives' tale, or that's a legitimate thing?
It's an actual legitimate thing, yes.
Wow. And I'm very blessed. You know, I'm knocking on wood. I've never really had bad poison ivy issues.
It's pretty miserable.
Yeah, my daughter got it once, and she was pretty miserable.
Right.
I'm very fortunate with that.
So just try to stay covered, you know, even when you deal with kind of the annoyances of the bug bites and things like that. Stay covered. You know, there's a lot of different bug sprays you can use. The ones with DEET are more effective.
So
look for the DEET. However, when you have a young child, we can't spray that DEET on them. We don't want it to be absorbed into their system.
Oh, boy.
So when you have
everything
that's good
is so bad for us.
Yeah. So, you know, make sure you talk to your pediatrician. You know, is your child appropriate for a DEET bug spray?
They used to spray. Remember the old days when they would spray, like, whatever that stuff was? They would use DDT or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
They would use that stuff.
Yeah.
The bugs didn't seem to be as bad.
They're pretty bad.
Now that we're older and they don't use that stuff, I'm not saying that had anything to do with it, but I just remember, like, there would be a truck. I grew up in a small town.
That would just come out and fumigate.
And the truck would just come out and be. And it would drive up and down every street.
You can still. There, I know there are some providers here in town that will do that for you if you're having like a backyard party or if you're having something where you really want to eliminate the bug.
They would hit the ballpark in Gillespie, where I grew up, and there would be it would be wonderful the few days after that because you wouldn't have any bugs anywhere.
Right.
I don't know why they stopped doing that.
Did you guys have gas masks that you had to wear for
we'd be out running.
Running
behind
the truck.
It going, my little brother's high and he can't figure out why. All right, so there you go. Bug bites, poison ivy. I want to come back. I want to talk about what I think could be one of the most dangerous things that people do in the summer, and that is grilling.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about your cooking outside. We're going to talk about safety and grilling when we come back. Summer safety is the topic. Our expert, Dr. Nicole Florence, on Ask the Expert.
You're listening to Ask the Expert. Welcome back to Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX. Brought to you by Memorial Health System. Our phone lines are open at 753-1240. That's 753-1240. Now, Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX.
And we're back. We're talking about summer safety. It's a wonderful time of year, isn't it? Beautiful, sunny skies, but it's also deadly. That's what the summer is, deadly. And we're talking about ways to make it safer. Our expert, Dr. Nicole Florence. All right, we talked about so many things. Let's get into what I think could be really dangerous, and that is grilling. Grilling can be very dangerous. We see it all the time.
Yeah.
What are people doing wrong when they grill?
Well, first off, I always ask people, where is or do you have a fire extinguisher?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have one in your home?
Yeah, we do under our sink.
Okay, so.
We have. It's never been used. Right. It might be empty for all
well,
I know.
Always check your fire extinguisher.
Right.
And if you're going to be grilling, it needs to be out there with you. Okay? The last thing you want to do is waste time running inside getting a fire extinguisher to put out a fire. So that's the first thing you want to remember
is
to know where it is and have it close. Make sure it's full and functional. The other thing is with the grill, and we see this all the time, it's all where you place the grill. I don't know how many times I see a grill that's near the siding of a house or is near a big flammable bush or is near brush or something that is highly flammable. So if something happens with the grill, it's going to be more difficult to contain.
I heard a story the other day. People were living in the basement or bottom floor of an apartment building. If they opened up their window,
right,
it was at ground level. And they had this area right outside their apartment, and this guy, because he was wanting to grill at his apartment and he didn't have a balcony, he put his grill right outside the window.
Right.
And lo and behold, he started it. The whole apartment caught on fire.
Right.
And almost killed people because of it was too
poor
close
placement.
To the building.
Too close to the building. So watch your placement of the grill. Also make sure it's not in a high traffic area. The last thing you want is having a family barbecue and you have kids running around your grill, maybe bumping into the hot grill or something happening to it. So make sure that you position your grill properly on your patio or in your backyard. Low traffic area. Make sure that there's no flammable items, at least within 5 feet or more of that grill.
Well, we see some people actually put like pits out where
Absolutely. Make sure you have that extinguisher.
Right.
Also, make sure that your grill is working properly. I don't know how many times there's a starter that's not working properly on a gas grill. You turn up the gas, it's not working. Then you try to maybe light it with your fire or match, and ba-boom. Right? Because there's too much gas.
I'll light a match.
Right. There's too much gas that's accumulated.
Next thing you know, you don't have eyebrows.
Right. Make sure you have a functioning grill. If you have any concerns with the starter, the grill itself, the connection, make sure all that's fixed and working properly before you use it.
We'll use the coals.
You're old school.
Oh, yeah, because it tastes, it tastes great. But we'll use the coals, and now it's like, but we won't use the fluid.
Right.
We'll use the coals that have the fluid.
They have the fluid on.
Pre-soaked, I guess.
Right.
And, it's good. But on windy days.
It can be
difficult. Don't even try it. Because it'll take forever and the wind and things.
In those cases.
One thing flies out.
Right. And so in those cases, too, you might want to have a water spray bottle next to you. So if something is maybe a small flame that's getting a little out of control or you have a little bit that comes out of that grill, you can squirt that really quickly and contain it.
Propane, you can turn it off. When it comes to these coals, you have to have the water
to
spray.
You have to have some water. So,
I like that. Very good.
So definitely do that. Now, the other thing we say is use a food thermometer. When you're cooking your food, we want to make sure that you cook it thoroughly. We don't want you to have food that is maybe a little, maybe you like it. I don't know. But, we also see a lot of food intolerances, food poisonings, and things like that this time of year because food is not being properly cooked.
Botulism is no fun.
Right.
Nor is salmonella. I know sometimes you go, the food's so good, the dysentery is worth it, but it never is.
It never is.
Dr. Nicole Florence, you were fantastic as always. Summer safety tips, you've got them today on Ask the Expert. That's it. We'll be back next week with another episode of Ask the Expert. So long, everybody.
This has been Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX, brought to you by Memorial Health System. For more information about Memorial Health System, visit choosememorial.org and join us every Tuesday at 3 for Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX.